Good morning, everybody. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. Today is Thursday, January 22, 2015. We're in room 107 at the State Capitol. Today, our focus will be on school facilities. There's been a report that was presented to the legislature in 2013 addressing short, long-term needs of school facilities in our state. We did take some actions during the previous legislative session, though a number of needs are still before us. And today we're going to hear Senate File 75 and Senate File 76. Presented by Senator Dahl. We have a number of testifiers. And then we're going to, before us, it'll be informational, but Senate File 126, which will be formally referred to us soon, and that's going to address this subject as well on alternative facilities. And specifically, we'll be looking at a proposal from Senator Housley addressing Forest Lake School District. So with that background, we welcome the presentations to come before us. And Senator Dahl, before us now is Senate File 75. And it's our understanding that we'll there's many testifiers that support that, but in when we get to Senate File 76, they'll perhaps give a reference to 75. And further, there's an author's amendment for 76, and we will have that for the committee as soon as it's available. And finally, the fiscal note is not quite ready yet, but there will be a lot of financial information, and Dr. Melcher will address that as well in his comments. And finally, I want to welcome back Bjorn Arneson. The last time he was here, he was saying goodbye to us as he went to the hospital, the delivery room, and Bjorn, would you like to give us an update on how things are going?
Chair members, all are well. He's a bouncing baby boy named
Leif.
That
would be Leif.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I haven't actually tested whether he bounces, but I presume from his chubby nature. Everyone's feeling good, pretty happy about it, so glad to be back.
Great. And I don't know if you watched our hearing yesterday on early learning and the importance of Ready for K, but I'm sure he's on a fast track. Okay. Very well.
Mr. Chair, he's already got 6 credits through PSEO.
Okay. Just very good. Senator Dahl, Senate File 75.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm going to make just some opening remarks about actually both bills and kind of how they came to be. I'm not smart enough to come up with any bills like this myself, but I am smart enough to know that this going into my 6th year on both education policy and finance, we've had school after school after school come before us and talk to us about their deteriorating facilities and how we've had a kind of a piecemeal approach over many years, again, since I've been here, that school district by school district, we've had to try to carve out a little piece of the budget to try to help individual school districts. So that's what these bills are about. You know, as we consider the condition of school districts across Minnesota, they certainly vary widely. Also, the tax base and the tax efforts for facilities long-term maintenance varies widely as well. Given the wide variations among school districts, the tax base, state involvement in facilities, we felt it's important that every student in every school has the equal access to good quality education in a quality learning environment. Over the last 20 years, state support for school facilities has gradually eroded, while new programs for such as alternative facilities funding and capital project referendum levies have contributed to the growing disparities between the funding among the districts. So that was the reason then the working group was put together. And, you know, it's good to have working groups and task force, but it's even better when we actually can take the results of those working groups and task force and put some good legislation together. So, again, the two bills that we have before us are a result of the recommendations that came from the working group. The Commissioner of Education convened that group. I believe they started their work last August and just wrapped up their work in January of 2014. And the I'll just give you a couple of the core principles from that working group. Under the understanding that our children are educated in public facilities and it's the state's responsibility to make sure that our children have the best education possibly, the first core is to provide a core minimum standard of facilities across the state for a general and uniform system of education, the general and uniform quote right out of our state constitution. The standard should, at a minimum, provide a pleasant, safe, and healthy education environment for every child, no matter the school district or the district that they reside in. That since the school boards have the responsibility to build and maintain school facilities, we have to give them some authority to make sure that their facilities are in the best possible shape they can be. And then we need to give those, as a state, the boards, the resources, and the tools necessary to make sure that they can provide quality environment and learning facilities. Other principles then based on those core principles. Funding should be adequate, equitable, sustainable. All districts should have access to comparable funding for comparable needs based on uniform procedures and eligibility. Local school districts should take the lead in determining the project needs, scope, and design. Funding formulas and administrative procedures should be as simple as possible so as to minimize administrative burdens and paperwork. Property tax levies for facilities should be equalized in a manner that minimizes variations in revenue per student for comparable tax efforts, regardless of variations in tax base. Special provisions should be made to ensure adequacy and equity for districts that have incurred facilities damage due to natural disasters. Funding for charter schools should be comparable to funding for district schools, and facilities funding should promote sound long-term planning, efficient use of resources. So based on that, there were a number of recommendations, and Senate File 75 is basically recommendation number 3, which says that related to the capital projects levy referendum. And the larger bill here, which is a little more complicated, is Senate File 76, which was recommendation number 1, establish a new long-term facilities maintenance revenue program to replace the current alternative facilities, deferred maintenance, and health and safety revenue programs, which provide adequate, equitable, sustainable long-term maintenance funding for all school districts statewide. So I, with that, I believe I'll bring up Dr. Tom Melcher, who is, of course, a member of that task force. I believe also Mark Bollinger, co-chair of the Facilities Task Force, will also be on hand to give you a little more history as to how the task force came up with this recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Dolly. Welcome.
Good morning, Senator and members of the committee. My name is Tom Melcher. I'm the Director of School Finance at the Department of Education. I provided staff support to the Facilities Working Group committee. I thought it might be helpful, though, first to have a few comments from Mark Bollinger, who it was the co-chair of the committee, just to kind of frame the – oh, you got it.
Welcome.
Welcome, and thank you, Senator and Chair Wieger and other senators. My name is Mark Bollinger. I'm the Executive Director of Facilities at Minneapolis Public Schools. I was one of the co-chairs of the School Facilities Finance Working Group, along with Superintendent Indahar of Moose Lake. And the working group consisted of 16 different members formed in the 2013 Omnibus E-12 Education Act. They represent school boards, superintendents, business managers, facilities directors. There were 4, I believe, members chosen by the state school commissioner. Included 3 ex officio members of the legislature, and then with 3 staff members of the Minnesota Department of Education. The intent, we worked very well together. The intent of this cross section added a big variety of knowledge base experiences perspective that spanned all of the school districts in Minnesota. We worked between August of 2013 and into 2014 to give you the 8 recommendations summarized by Senator Dahl. And it did meet our vision for the principles of facilities financing reform. Independently, each of the recommendations stood to update the current legislature, but collectively, the eight reformed school facility financing in total. There was some past legislature, as mentioned by Senator Weger, where we got to modify the review and comment process, very helpful, and to modify the funding for schools with unique needs. We appreciate that. But we certainly appreciate the current filing by Senator Dahl to address the long-term facilities maintenance. It was one of the major items that the committee took to and focused on to combine not all the alternative facilities levy that the Big 25 districts got to take advantage of, but the deferred maintenance revenue that the other 300 always vied for, and then combine some flexibility, if you would, for the environmental health and safety revenue at the same time, and then to equalize and make this long-term so that eventually the school boards then would have the authority to levy the amounts necessary to take care of their 10-year replacement plan or their deferred maintenance plans. So with that said, I'll cut this a little short on my side so we can get over to Dr. Melcher. But please know that this does not necessarily benefit MPS, but Minneapolis Public Schools supports this. Back to, as Senator Dahl mentioned, to create an adequate, equitable, and sustainable funding for all districts, for all schools, for all kids. And that's what we're here for. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bunger.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. There is a single sheet handout with the department logo on it that's labeled school long-term facilities maintenance revenue that's in your packets, and I wanted to briefly describe some of the background information. Yes. So currently we have three programs in statute that provide for long-term facilities maintenance of school districts. We have health and safety revenue, which applies to all school districts. It provides funding only for a very narrowly described set of health and safety hazards in school districts, including asbestos removal, indoor air quality, fire code compliance, and so forth. That does apply to all districts. It's almost entirely local property tax levy. And then we have two other programs that school districts can use to take care of deferred maintenance needs. We have one program called the Alternative Facilities Revenue that applies only to 25 very large school districts that allows those school districts to develop a 10-year plan and to make property tax levies based on their plan. There is not a limit on the size of those other than what the school board determines to be necessary for the school district to maintain its facilities and what the taxpayers are willing to pay within the district. And then we have the third program is the deferred maintenance program, which applies to the other 300-plus school districts that are not eligible for the alternative facilities program. It does limit the funding per student to $64 if the district has buildings that are more than 35 years old. Otherwise, it's something less than $64 per pupil. The state does provide for some equalization on that. Currently, we guarantee a tax base that's about 80% of the state average. So a district with an average tax base would receive no state equalization aid under the current program. And what we find is that the $64 per pupil level is not adequate for school districts to take care of some of the ongoing deferred maintenance needs. If we compare the funding from the three programs for school districts in the alternative facilities program against that for school districts not in the alternative facilities program, the average is about $590 per student for districts in the program and about $255 per student for districts not in the program. So it's more than a 2-to-1 margin. We think that the alternative facilities program is working well for the districts in the program and essentially that the other school districts are struggling in order to maintain adequate facilities. So Senate File 76 does pick up Recommendation 1 from the Facilities Working Group. It would establish a new long-term maintenance revenue that would replace the three current programs. Districts that were in the Alternative Facilities Program would continue to receive funding based on their 10-year plan. There would be no change for those districts except that the equalization would be improved up to 125% of the state average tax base per student. So for those school districts currently in the program that have relatively low tax base, there would be some equalization that's currently not available to those districts. For other school districts, there would be a gradual ramping up of the revenue. In fiscal year 2017, that would be set at a $300 per pupil level, which would roll in and include the old health and safety funding that was available. Also, because of the equalization improvement, the state share would grow from about 12% to about 21% of the total revenue in the program statewide. The bill would also phase in funding over a four-year period so that the maximum amount of revenue per student would grow to $400 per pupil in 2018 to $500 in 2019. And then in 2020, we would have one uniform system across the state where all school districts would be essentially in the same position that the large 25 are currently in. If you turn to the backside of the handout, you'll see the fiscal impact of Senate File 76 on school districts. I know the fiscal note is being completed, and the final numbers will be a little higher than this because this is only the data from the school district run, and this would also benefit charter schools as well, so there would be some increase there. But what you can see here in 2017 is that there would be a state aid cost of about $58 million. On a 90% basis, that's about $52 million, and there would be a slight reduction in school property tax levies of about $6 million. And that would be growing over time as this maximum funding level is ramped up. And down below that, you can see the comparison of the average revenue per student for school districts in the program versus those not in the program. And what you see is over time, the disparity between the 25 largest districts and the other districts would be eliminated gradually over a four-year period. And just some broad policy considerations as you look at this bill. The first one is that the working group recommendation is scalable. The legislature could choose to provide comparable funding more slowly or more quickly. So you could do this with more resources or fewer resources than what was recommended by the working group. Also, the equalizing factor is scalable. The committee suggested 125% of the average, which would provide most school districts in the state with some equalization aid. There are also alternatives in the way that the consolidation of funding streams could occur. You could choose to ramp up the deferred maintenance program without changing the health and safety program, or you could do it kind of partially. And what the committee suggested was rolling the two together in order to maximize the benefit for the school districts currently with the lowest revenue levels and to significantly reduce the paperwork that we currently have involved. And then finally, we know there are a lot of issues out there dealing with tax base and impact of property taxes on farm property, et cetera, and we think that those are two separate issues, but certainly there would be nothing to preclude a change in this bill from being married with some change in the way that we look at tax capacity for different types of districts, and that probably discussion would occur mostly in the tax committee, but just to say that there's nothing that would prevent these two from going forward together.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Miller.
And Mr. Chair and members, we actually have a meeting scheduled, Senator Stump, Dr. Melcher, and I with Senator Skoy, of course, head of the Tax Committee. We certainly want his input on this legislation. I know there's been some concern about the impact on ag land especially, but we do want to make sure we have the right balance for all the districts, especially in rural Minnesota. So.
Oh, yes. Senate File 75, Mr. Chairman and members, is picking up another recommendation from the working group. And what this would do would
Excuse
be
me,
to...
Excuse me, Dr. Melcher. Members, we have a few handouts. There's Mr. Arneson's summary of the bill. We have a handout showing the working group proposal versus current law and with further details. So just... Yep, you can refer to that.
Mr. Chairman and members, so what Senate File 75 would do is it would equalize the capital project referendum, which is used primarily for school technology at this point, at the same level that the working group recommended for equalization of the deferred maintenance, which would be 125% of the state average tax base per student. So, again, the majority of school districts in the state would be eligible for some equalization. It would also convert that levy in the future to an allowance per pupil unit, similar to what we do with the operating referendum levy. Currently, it's an allowance as a percentage of a tax rate.
Okay. Questions from the committee? We'll hear some testimony on both of these, but on 75, before we go to Senate File 76, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Well, okay, Mr. Chairman, I think this is probably on 76 that I have my question. Matter of fact, it is.
Yeah, we'll get to that then following some additional. We're going to put the author's amendment on, but on 75 at this point, Senate File 75.
Okay, all right. I just want to be sure, Mr. Chairman, that while Mr. Melcher is here and gave testimony, my question is specific to Mr. Corrigan. So
yes.
Before they leave the table, if I could ask my question.
Yes.
But first, of course, whatever else.
Okay. On Senate File 75, further comments or questions from committee? Okay. Please proceed.
Would you like to hear the rest of the testifier, or would you like to move that?
Following 76 and all testimony, then we'll entertain a motion for that. How about Senate File 76, and you have an author's amendment. Has that been distributed? We do have an email.
Chair, I do have the A1 amendment for Senate File 76.
Has that been distributed? Okay, it's being distributed. It's an author's amendment, and we put an author's amendment on as a courtesy on the first run. So all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Oops. Carried on the bill as it is before us, Senator Dahl. Senate File 76 has amended.
Okay, and I think at this time I'll call up the remainder of the testifiers, if that's all right.
Yes.
All right, so we'll bring up Kevin Hildebrandt, Faribault School District, and maybe Sam can also come up, or if there's anybody with Mr. Hildebrandt, move the proceedings along a little bit.
Good. Everyone for the tape, state your name and who you're representing. And reminder, too, I believe this is being televised and speaking to Minnesota.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Hildebrandt. I'm a director of buildings, grounds, and health safety director for the Faribault Public Schools. I've been there for 17 years. Prior to that, Kenyon Wanamingo School District for 19 years. I am a member of the MASMAS organization, which stands for the Minnesota Educational Facility Management Professionals. We are a group of buildings and grounds directors throughout the state to represent your public schools here in the state. We care for and maintain your public schools. With that, I am also was a member of the task force committee this past year, along with two other members from our group, that being Heather Nosen, who testified last fall to this committee, I believe, from Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District, and also Joe Arthurs from the Hibbing School District. Two of us from rural Minnesota, one from north, I'm from south Minnesota. Then Heather from a metro school district. Thank you for introducing the two bills on school finance reform. School facilities are a passion of mine, have been for many years. We practice, as a MASBS organization, a best practice approach on how to well maintain your school districts, but that always takes money to maintain them. Also, knowledge. Our organization spends a lot of time educating our members on how to properly maintain and fix your buildings, keep them up. Deferred maintenance is a huge issue of ours. Dates back many, many, many years. 20-some years ago, I read a book put out by the Office of the Legislative Auditor from the state on deferred maintenance. There was a study done, well-documented study, on how much deferred maintenance there is in this state. Not only in this state, that study didn't address nationally, but I also was past president of a national school plant management association for a number of years and on their board. We also address that on a national level on the state of the union, basically, on the bad disrepair of our schools on a nation basis. So bringing that back to home, we do have an issue that was stated some 20 years ago, and some programs have been in place, and over the years, many different programs have put into place. Alternative facility funding was one of them, where it's addressed in the bill here today. Alternative facility funding helps, at this point, the top 25 or the largest 25 school districts in the state. We are asking in these bills your support, and through the bill, to help expand that to all school districts. It has worked well for those large 25 to start handling their deferred maintenance. Deferred maintenance, the more you defer it, the more it costs later. A leaking roof down the road, if you don't handle it soon when it needs to be taken care of, will turn into fixing ceilings, fixing computers, replacing equipment inside of the building. So with that, we'd like to start a program here, once you, with your support, to pass the bills to help us start handling the deferred maintenance in our buildings. Studies have shown that well-maintained buildings does help test scores. Without having a good maintained building, students don't achieve as well as others. We are in full support of our fellow people in the working group, the superintendents group, the business managers group, school board group. We all met many meetings, had great consensus amongst the group on how we needed to handle this. Simplify the funding source. Over the years, like I said, in the past 20, many approaches were taken, and it's cumbersome, it's hard to understand. We strove in our committee to try to simplify that for you to help us achieve better funding. We would like for you to consider not delaying this action too long, because like I said, deferred maintenance just keeps adding up and up and up. It will cost us more in the long run if we don't start soon doing something. With that, thank you very much. Our organization very much appreciates you inviting us here to the table today to talk to you about deferred maintenance and alternative sources of funding our school districts. Thank you.
Thank you for your service. And members, we do have
a
great brochure here highlighting your priorities.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
We did have a handout in your packet for you today.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Walseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Sam Walseth, Director of Legislative Action for the Minnesota Rural Education Association, a voluntary organization of 199 school districts outside of the Twin Cities. I told you a couple of weeks ago when I was invited here that I would sound like a broken record this year, talking about 58 cents per square foot spent in the districts I represent compared to $2.79 per square foot spent by the largest 25 districts. For deferred maintenance, and that 5-to-1 ratio needs to close. That inequity is causing problems across rural Minnesota, and even in the Twin Cities, some districts that don't qualify as well, where school boards are faced with pulling dollars out of Fund 1, general fund, their general fund dollars to continually make capital improvements instead of investing in curriculum and support staff and other much-needed areas. We are here today. We support the whole slate of recommendations included in the task force recommendations, but specifically recommendation number one that you find in Senate File 76 is our top priority this session. I would just note that it's time to improve the Rural School District General Fund purchasing power for educational programs. This bill would improve the physical setting for hundreds of thousands of children and their teachers.
Excuse me, Mr. Walseth, did you say this is your top priority as an organization?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 76, it is. We toured the state this summer and fall and had many conversations about between early childhood teacher issues, and there are a lot of important, and I want to say they're close calls in a lot of these, but when we look at the fiscal inequity that exists in this area, and what it does to the bottom line budget of school districts, and you're going to hear from a couple people just after me, this is the gap that really needs to be closed first before we can really get at the other issues in education, at least in greater Minnesota. Just to finish, Mr. Chairman, I would note, too, that while property tax authority for school boards can cause some heartburn and consternation for folks, but I would also note that these are dollars that, while levied by the district, they're going to be spent on the private sector. It's the private sector who are going to come in, the contractors, the builders, laborers, who are going to come in and receive these dollars to maintain school facilities. So it does have a nice benefit of being a jobs program as well as improving the bottom line for school district budgets and the educational setting for students and teachers. I would note, too, that I've been told, and I need to find the source for this, but and maybe some of the business, the facility managers folks can clarify this, but an investment of 2 to 4% of your total facility value each year is what the experts would say you should be putting into budgeting for your deferred maintenance. And maybe I could be corrected on that, but I think the total amount of levy revenue contained in Senate File 76 is going to maybe get you to the bottom part of that 2 to 4%. So we're not talking about a record levels of funding here by any means. This is just a steady revenue stream for districts to be able to manage their long-term facility needs. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll close. I would note, I do appreciate Dr. Melcher's comment about looking at tax-based issues and where how this should be levied. In rural Minnesota, we do have some very stark-looking adjusting that tax capacity per pupil rates for about 100 very rural districts in the southwest and northwest corner of the state, or just due to the fact of very small amounts of students and very large values of agricultural production land, they are not going to qualify at that 125% of ANTC per pupil. And so we do want to continue the conversation with your committee, the tax committee, about what the appropriate tax base mix is for levying for these programs. And we can talk more in detail about that, but I know you've got a long list of witnesses, too. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Walsap. Senator Dahl.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hildebrandt did want to comment on Sam's question, if you could, before our next testimony.
Certainly.
What we use for best practice approach in the past has been 2% of your appraised property value is what you should set aside for maintenance of your buildings. $100 million, you should set aside $2 million.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Superintendent Wormstead.
Chairman Wieger, committee members, my name is Wayne Wormstead. I have been the superintendent of Windham Area Schools for the past 7 years, and I was a member of the Facilities Task Force, representing MASA and MREA. Thank you for allowing us to speak today on Senate File 76. This is, once again, one of the highest priorities rural schools have for this, for the inequity that's taking place. I'm here to talk about Windham, a rural school in southwest Minnesota that has 1,020 students. We have $65 million in facilities dating back to 1953 through the newest remodel in 2001. And we currently have $300,000 total in deferred maintenance and capital revenue, which is less than 0.5% of our entire facility's costs. So we did a little math, and we figured out just the past 4 years, we've put $800,000 into facility maintenance and repairs. This is a $500,000 crossover from our general fund into our building maintenance. That's a $500,000 that goes towards our facilities out of our general fund revenue that should be going towards early learning, class size reduction, further electives, and other student supports. You're probably wondering how rural Windham can afford to do this. Well, we're pretty lucky. Over the past 7 years, we've grown by 130 students, or about 13%, and we have great community support for our school district. We passed a $1.4 million operating referendum. And then you consider this, right off the top of that $1.4 million operating referendum, we take $500,000 just to keep our facility up for our public. So what does Windham's future show us? Well, we started a facility assessment this fall, brought in, took it, what do we need to do for a 10-year plan and 15 years out? Well, the need for us is $10 million over the next 10 years to take care of our facilities. That's just replacing like for like, roofs, windows, our HVAC repairs, air handling unit repairs, just our constant repairs to our building and maintaining that. And what we really want to focus on is that we want to have a quality education for all students across the state of Minnesota. Equitable. We realize that there's going to be disparities and some things that we're going to have to do with the tax base. But first, we need to have access. A final note about this is we have select school boards and school districts that have authority that other districts and school boards don't. And I don't begrudge the 25 biggest districts for having this. They should. We all should. It's about providing the best facilities for our students in the future. What I'd like to have you think about is Minnesota Just like local option revenue and other areas, we have to stop thinking about segregating our funding based on zip codes. All students across our state deserve the same efforts in our facilities. And I thank you for your time. I'll be around for any questions that happen later.
Thank you, Superintendent. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Lyndon Olson, a member of the Worthington School Board. I'm here on behalf not only of the Worthington Schools, but also on behalf of 199 rural school districts that are a member of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, which Sam Walthus is part of, and 395 public schools that are members of the Minnesota School Board Association, of which I am a director representing Southwest Minnesota. Worthington is a district of nearly 3,000 students in extreme southwestern Minnesota, 71% of whom are free reduced-price lunch, 70% are non-white, and 25% receive EL instruction. We are a rapidly growing district, with actual fall enrollments for several years outstripping estimates made just 6 months earlier by 40 to 100 students a year. This growth has caused space problems for our district, with all rooms full and some pull-out groups in our elementary schools meeting in hallways and our high school orchestra meeting in the gymnasium balcony. Rooms not intended for regular classrooms, such as an art room, have been converted to classrooms. In the fall of 2013, after a 10-month process that involved community input, voters defeated an excess levy referendum by 55 to 45% and a bond referendum to build a new intermediate school to help meet our space needs by 65 to 35%. Last fall, the levy referendum of $1,100 per pupil was approved to replace an expiring referendum. Because of the difficulty in passing referendums for capital bonding in rural areas, many districts are funding capital projects from the general fund whenever possible. In the case of Worthington, over the past 5 years, we have been able to fund $5.75 million in capital projects and are planning an additional $7.1 million in capital expenditures over the next 2 to 3 years, all from general fund dollars. This includes $1.75 million for technology and individual learning devices. We are able to do this without cutting instructional programs, primarily because of partnering with the cities on some projects and an increasing enrollment in our local levy. Other districts with a decreasing enrollment and or small or no local levies find it impossible to fund large projects such as we are able to do from the general fund. The problem of passing capital referendums in rural Minnesota arises from several factors. One of the major ones is the recent escalation in ag land values, and the tax burden of bonds now fall extremely heavily on ag land, and landowners are extremely reluctant to vote for such large tax increases. For example, my brother-in-law and his two sons farmed 2,000 acres in a district that recently passed a $20 million 30-year bond in a very close election. It will cost them between $750,000 and $1 million over the life of that bond, depending upon what ag land does during those times. In this district, the tax increases were up to $18 an acre for that new school bond. Situations like this split communities between those who own town property and those who own ag land. In this case, the election result caused some people to leave churches in the area and others to take their businesses to different towns. The superintendent then left while adding, "I passed a $20 million building referendum for a new school" to his resume. Other districts find that voting no on bond referendums are the only chance they have to vent frustration on tax increases, because county, city, and state officials can pass tax increases without voter referendums. In districts with a large number of elderly voters, such as Worthington, voters are reluctant to support school bond proposals because their returns on fixed investment income have dropped from 4 to 5% a few years ago to now where they are some are less than 1%. And with no children or grandchildren living in the district, their personal incentive to invest in schools and school improvements, including deferred maintenance needs, has waned or disappeared. When a district proposes a capital referendum, it takes a lot of time and dollars to conduct meetings, put together information, hold public meetings on the needs, costs, and providing voters with important information and answering questions. And if the vote fails, it takes just as much if not more time and money each additional time an additional referendum is proposed. Some districts have had as many as 3 or 4 times to try to pass a needed capital referendum. These funds and time needed to gain passage could have much better been spent and used directly to benefit students. There are 2 additional points on personal property funding I'd like to make. First, farmland and single-family dwelling market values are easy to set because there are so many like property arm's-length transactions to base values on each year. Some commercial properties may go years and never see a like sale or an arm's-length transaction and are valued at far below of what they would bring if they were sold today. In Worthington, we have a commercial property that is on the tax rolls at less than 40% of what it might bring if it were to sell today. The last point is that present equity funding does not come near closing the cost to taxpayers in property tax poor districts and property rich tax districts. Here I'm using the dollars of taxable market value per average daily membership or dollars of net tax capacity per ADM, which in some districts are as much as 580% greater than differences between districts. I think understanding this discrepancy should help understand why some districts can pass technology and other capital referendum with comparative ease, and some rural districts like Worthington struggle with getting voter approval when schools are populated beyond design capacity or in need of repair or upgrading. The goal should be that all school districts require the same effort to raise a dollar for needs in their district. Because of these problems, I urge your support for Senator Dahl's Bills 75 and 76. I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have or to provide you with examples of the capital funding that we in Worthington have done from our general fund. And I also will provide you a copy of my remarks if requested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Olson, for your service. We would like a copy of that, and we'll be looking at possible questions following the others that will testify. Thank you. Brad Lundell, followed by Eugene Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, I have Jim Bailey with me, our legislative chair. Yes. Why don't we take Mr. Piccolo and Mr. Athman, and then Mr. Bailey and Al wrapped up.
Yes, thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few thoughts and express our support for Senate File 76. First, as you know, charter schools are required to meet all federal, state, and local health and safety laws that apply to traditional school districts, and we support that requirement. However, charter schools do not have access to health and safety levies or revenue to meet those requirements, which means the compliance costs for all those health and safety requirements come out of general revenue, leaving less funding for teaching and learning. Second, the use of general revenue to address health and safety costs have been exacerbated over time as the state has shifted education funding to local property taxes over the last decade, since charter schools do not receive that, which has led to a growing disparity between school funding for public school students who attend traditional districts and charter schools. Last year, there was a national study that looked at funding in each state and found that there's a significant growth in the disparity of funding for students who attend public charter schools in Minnesota and traditional public schools. This growing disparity adds to the fact that charter schools do not currently have equivalent means to address health and safety needs and requirements. So we appreciate that Senate File 76 begins to address this funding equity gap by providing charter schools with some long-term facilities aid, as well as providing the flexibility to utilize those funds in a way that makes most sense for the school to address health and safety issues and other needs of students. I would be remiss, Mr. Chair, members, in a discussion related to facilities if I did not ask again that the legislature address the current prohibition of charter schools owning buildings directly and creating a state bonding authority to issue revenue bonds for charter school facilities. We know that allowing qualified schools, and we know that not every charter school should qualify to own a building directly, as well as creating a state bonding authority to issue revenue bonds, will reduce the cost for both individual schools as well as for the citizens of Minnesota. Finally, we appreciate the efforts of the task force and Senator Dahl, Senator Housley, Senator Kent, Senator Stump, and you, Mr. Chair, to provide more equitable funding for chartered public schools with establishment of the aid under Senate File 76. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Peckles. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Earl Ottman. I've been working in school finance for
Excuse the typo. It's not Earth.
Yeah. Right. It's Earl. Okay. I've been working in school finance for over 35 years, 29 years for the Pierce School District. I've served on both the school finance work groups and the school facilities work group. This is some great legislation. It needs to be passed. But I am here not primarily for the Pierce School District, but to represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, MASBO. MASBO endorses this legislation as well as we endorse the entire school facilities working group's recommendations. This legislation, first of all, revenue is not equal. It is not adequate, and it is not sustainable across the state of Minnesota. We need this type of legislation to fix our buildings. The deferred maintenance out there is huge. I'll give you an example just for the Pierce School District. In the past 7 years, we were short on space for special ed. We added some special ed space. We remodeled our girls and boys high school locker rooms. These locker rooms hadn't been touched for 40 years. We've changed a former kindergarten classroom that was in our high school building into a new science lab. We replaced our 40-plus-year-old boilers that only had a life expectancy of 25 years. We repaired small portions of our high school roof and remodeled our elementary high school main entrances to improve security. The total cost of this is about $2 million. Now, this money didn't come from deferred maintenance. It came out of the general fund, money that we could have used to improve our educational services to our students. And we're not alone. You've heard testimony already that that's what districts are doing in order to fix what needs to be fixed, repair what needs to be repaired. When these buildings are built, the taxpayers have said, we need this building, but after that, it's very difficult to maintain them. If you build your house and 20 years later, you need to repair the roof. The roof is the same age, but are you going to repair that roof and do the north side 1 year, the south side the next? No, you're going to do the whole roof at once. We can't. We cannot do that. We have to do it piecemeal and pray that as we get to it, the roofs that didn't get fixed will hold up. So we need this legislation passed so that we have a sustainable, equitable source of revenue. And MASBO, like I mentioned, realizes this because we struggle. All business managers struggle across the state to try and find the revenue to set it aside to do the work that needs to be done. As Sam Walseth noted, this is a win-win-win. It's a win for the students to get to be in buildings that are safe and well-kept. It's a win for the taxpayers. Their investments that they've put their hard-earned tax money into are maintained. And it's a win for the construction industry. They, too, benefit from this because they're the ones who are going to be doing the work. So I thank you for your time. I will be available for any questions that you may have. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging us there. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity Education. Uncharacteristically, I'll be brief today, and I'll turn it over to Dr. Bailey. I just would like to say that our position paper is available from Schools for Equity Education that talks about our this is our top priority coming into this legislative session, and it is on our platform. It's the number one item, and also full discussion there in the position paper that we have had distributed. I think that these are very, very important. I think the only caveats I would say here is that we support the whole set of recommendations, and this only deals with a couple of those recommendations. We hope that as the session moves on, we'll talk about the debt service equalization, and we'll also talk about things like the equalization of the lease levy. I talked a little bit yesterday in the early childhood discussion about some districts are going to need to lease space. And so equalizing that lease levy would be something that's important. But again, let's talk about these bills today and how important they will be. I couldn't have said it better than Board Member Olson from Worthington. The equalization, we believe, is key in this discussion. We think that the equalization has to take place. We are schools for equity, and we deal with equalization, tax equalization. We really appreciate that was addressed in the recommendations. And moving forward, we hope that the equalization levels, in conjunction with discussions of the tax committee, will be able to be there so that the property taxpayers throughout the state will be treated fairly. Also, I think, as Sam Walseth and others have pointed out, there are ag issues, and we have those issues amongst C members as well. You'll hear from two individual districts that I'm familiar with later, Dr. Flathman from Fridley and Dr. Madsen and the group from Forest Lake, talking about how the alternative facilities program they're not eligible for that, and how that they're going to make strong cases as to why they should be included. And I think that all districts in the state can make that same case. We're dealing with a lot of different cross subsidies in the system now. This is a large cross subsidy, as is special ed, as are in a number of other areas. And we think that taking care of this issue will certainly help districts throughout the state. So I'll turn it over to Dr. Bailey.
Thank you. Welcome, Dr.
Yeah,
Bailey.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you this morning. My name is Jim Bailey. I'm the superintendent of the St. Michael Elbertville School District. Today, I'm primarily here to represent Schools for Equity in Education, C. I currently serve as the chairperson of their legislative committee. In listening to the other testimony this morning, I'm going to try not to duplicate some of the same pieces that we certainly agree with, but maybe tell a little bit of the story of listening to the testimony and what it strikes me as this morning. First, I want to commend Mr. Melcher, the members of the committee, for an excellent report. Often reports come, whether it's from my own school district or others, that don't always have helpful background information as well as solid recommendations. And we certainly support all the recommendations of the report. And as Mr. Lundell said, the one piece that we see absent is the equalization piece. That's very important to obviously schools for equity, whether it be in taxpayer, that we don't have taxpayers that have to have an undue burden for their taxes because of a lower property tax base, or whether it's just access to funding. As I said, C supports the recommendations. One of the other things that strikes me is the variety of organizations. I'm not sure when you have committee hearings that you can get the consensus that seems to be building around facilities needs. This isn't a rural, it isn't an urban issue. Some may have access to it. We certainly agree that it's necessary for people to have access to the alternative facilities funding, but we just want others, members of our organizations and others across the state, to have comparable access. And access not only means that there's a law or statute that allows us, but access means that we have, that it's equalized so that we can truly take advantage of that. And so I hear some themes, and those are the themes, quite frankly, that we all have, all our students can have access to comparable funding for schools. One of the core principles that was in the report that I think really touched on this, it said, it goes on to say that a core standard should at a minimum provide pleasant, safe, and healthy educational environment for every child, no matter the school or the district they reside in. And I think these recommendations certainly do that. As a school district, as school districts across the state, some of us have older buildings than others. Some have newer buildings, but we still face those challenges of meeting the needs of the education, of a 21st century education. In preparing for this committee presentation today, I did do some research, not specific to our district. You've heard some of those. But I found that the American Society of Civil Engineers that provides a report card on all the infrastructure needs of every state identified that the state of Minnesota in their schools, this would be in their 2013 report, has $3.7 billion in infrastructure funding needs, quite significant. And if you divide that out, if my math is right, that's about $4,400 per pupil. Right now, our district, St. Michael Albertville, is able to basically has access to that $64 that Mr. Melcher provided. And after that, we go into either our referendum dollars or our general ed dollars that are provided by the state. As I said earlier, we certainly support that alternative facilities funding is available to the 25 largest school districts, and we think something very comparable should do that. Mr. Lundell mentioned cross subsidies. Just in our district, if you start with the basic $5,831 that is provided to schools, we take $500 off the top of that for our special ed cross subsidies. We take another $300 per pupil off of that to fund our compensatory programs that currently aren't funded by the compensatory formula if we're truly going to close the achievement gap. And then on top of that, we take additional dollars to fund our facilities. So when it gets down to the general education program, what's impacted by these cross subsidies, including this, is the basic program for our students, the very foundation of that. I'll just quickly talk about the impacts. We know that good facilities, as was mentioned earlier, does impact student achievement. And it really is intuitive. We don't need research to tell us that. If facilities are not well maintained, they're not comfortable, students are distracted. Staff are distracted. It's very difficult to teach in. So we do know that that's important. We know it's important for safety. A couple years ago, we had Sandy Hook. I know every school district in the state went back and looked at its security measures. And in those security measures, we all went back and saw what we could do to improve. And we certainly did that as well. And finally, it impacts our ability to be efficient. We know we've used some of our general ed dollars, hopefully as a good investment, to replace our lights, to replace motors in our HVAC systems so that we can be more efficient, and we'd like to do more of that, and certainly this would help us to do that. I don't want to leave without talking about debt service equalization. And that is not only an issue for C, but certainly for my own school district. We're one of the school districts that certainly, as other school districts have no longer get that debt equalization aid because of the way the formula works, we still do. This last year, that equalization aid dropped for us. And so as a result of that, our taxpayers in our community picked up another $1.2 million in property taxes as a result of that shift. So it is important. We cannot ask our taxpayers for the capital projects levy, quite frankly, because it isn't equalized. And so, as was said, it's primarily used for technology, so that, again, limits our ability to do that. I want to thank you for your interest in this bill. I want to thank you, and I want to just draw the focus to, I think, what are four really important tenets. One is to allow us to do long-term planning for our facilities. And to ensure that we have sustainable funding to implement that plan. A few years ago, 4 years ago, we put together in our district a five-year facility plan, looking at the limited dollars that we had available. What we find is most of the items on that plan are being deferred. We think the other piece is it needs to be comparable to what seems to be a level that is working, and that is that level that schools that have alternative facilities funding currently have. We strongly believe it has to be equalized or the access for us will not be there. And we also ask you to look at simplification. It's very difficult to explain to taxpayers. One of the things we've learned is our taxpayers want to know three things. How are their dollars being spent? It's no surprise to you. Are our students achieving? And finally, are you keeping up our facilities that we in the community have invested in? And so that's why we think this is important. And so to explain it, we'd ask you to make this as simple as possible so that we can do a good explanation to our taxpayers so we can answer their questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Bailey. Our next two testifiers, Grace Kelleher from MSBA and Peggy Flathman, Superintendent Fridley.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
By the way, I am drafting a bill on debt service equalization as we speak.
Okay. We hear you. Okay. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and it's a pleasure to be with you today. I wanted to just sort of start out with, you know, cutting to the chase. So often you hear political speak when people sit up here. I really want to point out some pieces that you might have just walked by. Mark Bollinger from Minneapolis back here was the chair of this facilities working group. I was a member of it. And he said one of the most profound things that I've sort of kept in my heart as I've gone forward on that. And he said, we've got a large pond in Minneapolis of dollars we can spend on facility maintenance. He goes, my pond doesn't get smaller by bringing everyone else up. And I was amazed. I mean, to have someone not say, me, everybody's got to get the same or it's not right, was a wonderful thing to say. And he was a great leader. He made that experience, and I've sat on lots of working groups, a very positive one where everyone felt welcome. The other piece I want to say is the superintendent who is here, I was in front of his board talking about school facilities and equalization, and they were very clear that they need some help, and that's a big part of the underlying recommendations that we think are important. When I started this, little did I realize there are huge disparities across the state in what districts receive for facility funding. And as we dug through that, it became more and more obvious that this is the last great mountain that has to be climbed and reformed for school districts. Senator Rieger, your chair, has been at this for a long time. He's always been interested. He gave a huge report to the legislature on how school district needs were important. And it's wonderful to have him leading this going forward. He gets it. He's seen it. As have I, and you always like to believe your district is sort of the model of what everybody else has. That's not the case. And as Mr. Olson mentioned, his districts, they're having virtually all their pullout classes in the hallway. They're practicing junior band in the balcony of the gym. Our districts are creative, and they do the best they can. But there really does need to be some legislative intervention. We found some of these formulas have equalization, some don't. Some haven't ever been used, some have. It's really a situation that is in sad need of attention. Our Delegate Assembly, which is our grassroots meeting, brings together 150 school board members regionally elected. And they went through the report on the Facilities Committee, and they were 96% in favor of this. And this is all kinds of districts going forward. So we really encourage you not only to look at these bills in their individual structure. It was critical for my delegates that the whole picture be looked at and that it not become picked apart and forwarded by just those organizations who get some kind of benefit out of a piece. It's a collective package that you as legislators need to look at. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will be happy to answer questions when testimony is over. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Ms. Kelleher. Superintendent Flathman.
Thank you very much, Senator Wigger, and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Flathman. I am the superintendent of the Fridley School District here in just north of downtown St. Paul in Minneapolis. In your packet is a PowerPoint that I have handed out for you. And, you know, what I'm going to tell you today is not any different from what you've heard before, but hopefully I, as a visual learner, might be able to just look at some pictures.
Excuse me, Superintendent. And this is in behalf of Association of Metropolitan School Districts.
Absolutely. That was my next comment. I'm here on behalf of the AMSD. As previous testimony has given, we are members of many of the other organizations, so I think that does speak to the solidarity yes. that we have here. So we'd like to give you a glimpse of the Fridley School District and our story, and primarily from the perspective of our facilities and the AMSC platform, as well as the entire task force recommendation, and why it's important to our students. And hopefully you'll see the connection from Fridley to the districts that you all represent. There are 4 points on the AMSD platform. The phase-in eligibility of the alternative facility program that we've been talking about, along with expanding the allowable use of the building lease levy and maintaining additional allowances for members of our intermediate educational cooperative and joint power districts, and increasing the operating revenue, capital revenue allowance. But obviously today I'm here to talk primarily about the expansion of the alternative facility revenue. As we've learned here and as we've known before, there are 25 school districts, maybe 26, that do have access to this money. The rest of us are given minor levy authority for maintaining our facilities. As a result, districts like mine must run levy campaigns that many times force delays or prevent completion of needed projects until emergencies arise and costs skyrocket. Alternatively, districts are forced to shift dollars to critical facility projects from their general education funding, which otherwise would have been spent on programming and the students in the classroom. So here's a little glimpse of who we are at Fridley. We are an international baccalaureate school district. All of our schools are IB World Authorized schools. That program prepares our students for college and career readiness, giving all students, 3-year-olds through seniors, a rigorous curriculum that emphasizes problem solving, hands-on projects, inquiry-based learning, global focus, and taking action in our own community. We have 3,000 students, 65% free and reduced lunch is our number. We have 40% students of color, 15% are EL students, and 15% are students that receive special services. Of our 3,000 students, over 1,000 are open enrolled into the Fridley School District. And now about our facilities. We have 5 buildings, our high school, our community center, Stevenson Elementary, Hayes Elementary, and our middle school. Our first graduating class was in 1959. We're not, in terms of school districts, we're not that old. But our buildings almost represent those same 50 years. With all of our local levies, the taxpayer costs for the debt service, building bonds, or alternative facility maintenance levy is based on a property wealth of our school districts. Without significant commercial or industrial development to broaden the tax base, residents and business owners in our district, as a low property wealth district, our taxpayers pay significantly more than our peers in our high property wealth districts. 6 years ago, we did a facility study that focused primarily on our enrollment. We needed additional classroom space due to increasing enrollment and the implementation of our all-day kindergarten, which we did in 2006. As a result of that study, we did build additions on both of our elementary schools using lease levy authority. That study, however, shed light on an ever-increasing deferred maintenance needs. The next thing that we did this past year is complete a new 10-year facility plan. We have sorted our projects into 2 categories, Priority 1 and Priority 2. These projects we identified simply represent what you or I would do if our homes were 50 years old, and to make sure they might last for another 50 years. Our Priority 1 projects included roofs, tuck pointing, windows, floors, restrooms, HVAC, security upgrades, and technology infrastructure. That totaled $27 million for our buildings. And our second priority, parking lots, tennis courts, replacing the boilers, track, field, auditorium maintenance, that's $28 million, for a total of $55 million. Our annual facility budget is $850,000, which consists of $450,000 in capital project levy, which was voter approved, and $200,000 in deferred maintenance. And then we use $200,000 from operating capital. So if you do the math, you can see that it is not possible for us to continue to keep our buildings in good working condition without going to our taxpayers. With just $850,000 just to do our priority one projects, we would complete those in 2045. I think we'd have other deferred maintenance pieces on the table by then. Therefore, the expansion of the alternative facility revenue is essential for the Fridley School District, as many other districts across the state. The state must reduce the disparity for school districts and taxpayers by providing state aid through alternative facility levy and the debt equalization. By expanding the alternative facility program to all school districts, Fridley would be able to complete the priority one in 15 years, increasing our funding from the $850,000 to about $1.7 million annually. While districts may need to seek voter approval for some building projects, the additional funding would double our facility budget at Fridley. Our students deserve it, a well-maintained and safe environment. By implementing these recommendations, all school districts would have the same opportunity to provide quality, safe, and healthy learning environments for students. I thank you very much for the opportunity to come before you and speak on behalf of the Fridley School District. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. And Senator Dalton, now we're going to open it up for questions. Senator Kiffmeyer will lead off, and I believe Dr. Melcher, you may have a question first. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Melcher, it's been a little bit now since your presentation, but in regards to there was a comment you made about the 25 school districts and then the rest of the school districts. But in the first year of its operation, what I thought I heard you say was that the top 25 school districts were getting an increase in their ability to levy as well. Is that correct?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, the way that the bill reads is that the all school districts in the state would receive an increase in their equalization. So the equalizing currently for most school districts that are in the alternative facilities program, most of those 25 school districts, the program is entirely property tax. There is some grandfathered state aid that goes back to 1997 for a handful of those districts. So for the 25 districts that are currently in the program, there is no change in their ability to do a 10-year plan and make decisions about what their high priorities are and levy for them. The difference for those 25 districts would be if their tax base is below 125% of the state average tax base per student, there would be some equalization aid. But their ability to raise revenue has not changed. They would simply have access to the same equalization that would apply to the other districts.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, the value of the question, Mr. Chairman, and getting that. But I also have another. What is that? Is there a percent amount, or is that a calculation again of the equalization aid?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, the equalization would be calculated annually based on 125% of the state average adjusted net tax capacity per pupil. So currently that's about $7,500 per student is the average statewide, and that would make the equalization factor or the guaranteed tax base about $9,000. So when we calculate the state share, we look at the school district's tax base per student as a percentage of that equalizing factor. So if you had a state average school district with a $7,500 per pupil tax base and we were guaranteeing $9,000, the levy portion would be $7,500 divided by $9,000.
So that, you know, maybe 80% property tax and 20% state aid. If the school district's tax base was half of the state average, then their state aid share would be higher. So it's a sliding scale. It depends on where the school district's tax base is in relation to the state average tax base, or in relation to this 125% of the state average. So school districts above the 125% level would continue to have all the money coming from property tax, and the farther the district's tax base per pupil is below the average, then the higher the state share. There would always be a local levy contribution for all of the districts, but the state share would grow depending on the district's tax base.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's very helpful. I appreciate that very much. And I certainly want to, understanding these formulas and the fact that they change is very difficult then to vote on bills, understanding how they affect your districts, you know, in your Senate district, which is most important, you know, to me, is what does this do for my district, especially considering Superintendent Bailey's testimony in regards to that. But it also, through this bill, though, also does a large portion on the local property taxpayers.
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, I think in order to try to help explain how this would affect individual districts, I think in the packet there are some computer runs showing what the mix of state aid and property tax would be in the two bills. The state aid property tax mix is the same. If you look at the run for Senate File 75, we show the percentages there, which might be helpful for you to look at. This has to do with the capital project levy, but if we're speaking specifically of equalization, they use the same formula. So you could see, just looking, these are school districts in numerical order. If you go about to the middle columns there, three and four columns from the right, you'll see the levy share and the state aid share, and that would be the percentages if a district passed a capital project referendum. But the same aid and levy share would apply within the deferred maintenance program.
Mr. Chairman, I have this titled Senate 75, but I was looking for the 76 and.
Okay. Dr. Melcher.
I don't. Is there something supposed to be in my packet, or am I missing something?
There is a run on 75 and a run on 76. I just pointed out the 75 because it shows you what those percentages are. The run on 76 also shows what the dollar increase that's proposed is in aid and what the dollar increase that's proposed is in levy, but it doesn't show the percentages. I ran out of columns on the page to make it readable. So you can look there and calculate the same percentages, but it would show you what that mix of aid and levy is as well for individual districts.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Potentially, some members may not have it, and so we'll make sure it's the intent to share this, everything be posted. So
Mr. Chairman, that would be very helpful, because without that, we're just – thank you. All right. That's very helpful.
Mr. Chair, could we get that run at this time so we have copies of that?
Yes. Did staff hear the request?
Mr. Chair, it appears some must have the run of 76 and some 75. I don't have a 75, but I have a 76.
Mr. Chair, I have a 75 without a 76.
Yes, that will be rectified. Okay. Please continue. Additional questions? We may have it too out in the audience, some of the handouts. Further questions, comments? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I necessarily have questions as you know, maybe some comments. I had the chance to meet with Dr. Melcher during the interim, and it was very helpful in helping to understand this. Looking at Senate File 75, you know, deferred maintenance is one of the most pressing issues that our school districts face. And in all honesty, one of the most frustrating. Students need a well-maintained building, an adequate building, in order to be effective at learning. So when voters approve construction of a building, it's my belief that they also approve the tacit expectation that school districts and school boards will maintain those buildings at a reasonable condition. And leaking roofs and missing tuck points and, oh my gosh, I've heard of schools where they've got critters, able to breach the doorways is not what I would consider adequate condition. But also these campaigns for deferred maintenance levies are very time-consuming and expensive for local districts to run. Equalization has been a long-standing practice of the state. And during the recession, I think reasonably, some of that was pulled back, and I think now it's time for us to take a look at that again. Too often we look at new spending on new programs before we take care of the really basic needs and the commitments that we've had in the past or expect to maintain. I do support the concept of this. Two things. Senator Dahl and I had a chance to speak last night very briefly. One of the concerns I hear is from voters and residents of school districts that believe that they're going to have their voice and their influence taken away. And so what I'd like to do, if we lay this on the table, Mr. Chair, is continue to work with Senator Dahl on an idea that may allow local residents to petition their school boards to actually have to run a campaign, but shy of that, the school board would have the approval to move forward. And then I think, second of all, would be my concern is around the level of funding and the level of equalization that we're talking about. Under this proposal, we would be looking at covering 28% of the long-term maintenance levy, and we would be looking at covering 33% of the capital project levy, and historically those levels have been lower. And so I was glad to hear Dr. Meltzer talk about the fact that these proposals are scalable, and hopefully we have time to take a look at those.
Senator Dahl?
Well, if there's no other questions, I really...
In terms of your commitment to work with others in the process, I would assume that you'll continue. You met last night, and obviously the dialogue will continue on many of these. It's going to be at least 70-some days before we roll out a proposal for an omnibus bill. And so that would be our hope on this and any other bill that we can get the best ideas out there. And ultimately, it's going to be on affordability in terms of the overall budget and making sure on the equity equalization argument we can have a program. But if a district still can't afford it, that was just so gripping on the testimony, particularly for Worthington, where you divided a community and people know. We have to talk to tax committee and we need to talk amongst each other. And Senator Pratt, both of us as some former school board members, we know about local control, and I've heard a message from representatives of the school boards as to what they would like. And of course, we were elected from the public, and so it's putting together a proposal that will ultimately serve students best. So, in terms of our objective, there's that commitment to work with everyone as we approach a draft omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Definitely, I'm more than willing to visit with all sides. I hope that all of you, if you have questions or concerns, really go to the source and talk to your school board members, your maintenance and facilities, supervisors, your teachers, your school boards, and get their input on this. I've carried some bills over the years, whether it's MTLE or the grad test repeal, and didn't quite have the support that this bill has. And I tell you, I haven't had anybody in my office that's actually opposed to this. And you've heard today from the broad spectrum of people that
that have to deal with these issues, whether it's financially or structurally, that this is a bill that we need. We need this session, and again, scalability. I know our budget will still be tight, even with a surplus, but I hope that we can find room to put the pieces in place for to meet the needs of all the people that have spoke today.
We'll take one more question, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be for Mr. Bollinger from the Facilities Task Force. We've heard a lot of good testimony today in support of this, and I think that's great. But I do have a question. Another thing we've heard from three or four different folks today is about the concern about the impact in deep rural districts, the influence of the agricultural land and its values. Was this discussed at all in the Facilities Task Force? And if so, do you have any suggestions on how that could possibly be handled?
Ms. Bowen.
Chair Wieger and Senators, there was some slight discussion about that and the tax impacts, a lot of information coming from Dr. Melcher on this piece. So we did not necessarily feel like what we gave you was going to be necessary to set in stone on the amounts, thus the discussions between the senators and Dr. Melcher about how we might be able to tune this as we go over the years. We understand and understood that there is a big discrepancy between some of the different areas, and in my area that doesn't occur inside of Minneapolis itself, but we certainly understand in all the other areas it does. So I apologize. I do not have a good answer to take care of that, and I hope between Dr. Melcher and the senators that you can work through that. Thank you.
Thank you. And a follow-up. Senator Dahl, I hope that I appreciate you bringing these bills forward, and I hope that you will be willing to work on this issue, because I think it is an issue of high importance for our deep rural districts. And I think, again, the theme here today has been a lot about fairness and equity and stuff. So I think I'm hoping that you're willing to keep that process going so we can have some good dialogue and probably come up with some solutions that are fair and equitable for these deep rural districts.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Dames. Again, yes, Senator Scoy brought up some similar concerns at our rural caucus. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have a meeting. I don't remember if it's this week or next week about that with Dr. Melcher and Senator Stumpf, who's also has a great interest in this over the years. So definitely I think that's important to keep in the forefront of our discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dahl, to each of the testifiers. And Senate File 75 will be laid on the table. Senate File 76, as amended, will be laid on the table. And as I indicated, over the next several weeks, we'll work on developing our omnibus bill. Next, Senate File 126 on alternative facilities funding, the exact subject we've been talking about, but they focus on Forest Lake. The bill is technically not referred to us yet, but as we have all of the various persons here, we'll hear that testimony, and at a subsequent meeting, we'll formally cite it and lay it over as well. Thank you very much, Senator Housley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We have Senate File 126 in front of you. We're back. Since the time Forest Lake has come before the Senate, the ALT facility maintenance has increased by 50%. Mr. Martini will tell that to you in a little bit. But I just want to tell you, I've been able to tour many of the buildings in Forest Lake, and most recently Forest Lake Elementary. And there are days in Forest Lake Elementary where the kids have to wear coats because the boiler system, the heating system, is so antiquated. It's from the 1950s, and they have boilers that send steam heat under the street to get to the registers in the building across the street. Many of them don't work, and for 2 days they have to shut down the heater, the boilers, to try and fix this, so the kids have to wear coats in school. In the boiler room, and I don't know if you guys have toured other schools, but I also have Stillwater in my district, who is a member of the ALT facilities, and if you look at your sheet with all of the computations, Stillwater's out of the top 25, but does get the ALT facilities. In the boiler room in Forest Lake, they have Bessie and Bertha, I think their names are, the big two huge boilers. But it was dripping all over me in this boiler room, and they said they've had the best plumbers out there to try and figure out where this leak is coming from, but they can't figure it out. Also, we were going to have two students come and testify today, Sam Doughton and Maxwell Nelson. Please read their testimony in your packets because it kind of explains what it's like to be a student in the district where they have to sign a safety waiver in order to be part of the swim team to swim in the pool. They can't have swim tournaments at their school because of the condition of the swimming pool. And again, these students get to travel around in their conference to these other districts that, like Stillwater, that have been able to maintain their facilities over the years. So there's a real urgent need in the Forest Lake School District to get into the ELT facilities program now. And so we have Superintendent Linda Mattson to go first and then Business Manager Larry Martini. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you. Chairman Wieger and members of the committee, my name is Linda Mattson, and I'm the superintendent of Forest Lake Area Schools. I've worked in a number of positions throughout the district and for the past 34 years and the last 6 years as superintendent. It's a vicious cycle that continues year after year, and were it not for some of the outstanding academic and extracurricular programs that we're able to provide, amazingly successful programs, given the budget constraints, our district would be in a financial tailspin right now. We have science equipment in our high school that dates back to the 1970s. We have buildings with walls and windows that are incredible drains to our district in terms of energy costs and repairs. Our heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems in almost every school are in need of replacement. And the roofs on many of our schools are crumbling and are constant financial drains. I would submit to you that while our district is providing our students with a great education, we could be doing so much more if our facilities were even close to those of our neighboring schools. Right now, the age of our buildings and the square footage of our facilities are nearly the same as that of our next-door neighbor to the east, Stillwater. Stillwater has qualified for alternative facilities funding for many years, while we have not. We're just under that minimum threshold, arbitrary as it might be, in both square footage and building age. To the south, we border the White Bear Lake School District, which also can levy for alternative facilities dollars, while we cannot. If you could see the huge turnout at our athletic and fine arts events, students coming to support their classmates, you would see the great pride that our students take in our school. And yet they have to use facilities that are in disrepair and in need of replacement, such as the track, the tennis court, and the Performing Arts Center, to name a few. They have to walk into classrooms that are basically falling apart and are outdated. They have to use the same classroom equipment that their parents and even their grandparents used. And they have to continue to know that their counterparts in other school districts have much nicer, much newer, and much more up-to-date facilities. It must frustrate them to no end, as it does many of us. They must wonder why they have to settle for subpar facilities because their school district falls below some arbitrary square footage measurement. I would encourage you to support Senate File 76 and Senate File 126. Thank you for your time today, and thank you for all of your work on behalf of the students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Good morning, Welcome. Chairman Wieger and members of the Senate Committee. I'm Larry Martini. I've been the business manager for the Forest Lake School District since 2001. Before that, I was the business manager in Spring Lake Park Schools, and I was in Spring Lake Park from 1988 to 2001. And I am very pleased to be here today to testify on behalf of not only Senate File 126, but Senate File 76 and other deferred maintenance issues. There is a list of 25 school districts in the state of Minnesota that receive special access to property tax-driven deferred maintenance revenue. The limits to achieve that deferred maintenance revenue are 15 years in average age and 1,850,000 square foot, or 1.5 million square foot
and 35 years in average age. A district submits a multi-year deferred maintenance plan to the Minnesota Department of Education. Once the Department of Education approves that plan, the district has access to that property tax-driven alternative facilities funding. If a school district does not meet that criteria outright, they have the potential to be grandfathered in. Stillwater, North St. Paul, and White Bear Lake are a few of the school districts grandfathered in more than a decade ago. Wayzata Public Schools was the last district to be grandfathered or placed on this list in 2012. Even though they don't meet the qualifying criteria I mentioned earlier. We've had a facilities task force examining our facilities during the past several years. One of the members on that original task force is the maintenance supervisor from the North St. Paul School District. He resides in our school district and sends his kids to our schools. This individual also participates in our school board's building and grounds committee that meets 9 times a year. During his first few years on that committee, he was amazed that we were not part of this alternative facilities program. He would constantly comment that the size of a district shouldn't dictate whether you are able to participate in this program. It's really the average age of the facilities that is more important than the size of the district. I too believe that whether you have one building over 30 years old or 15 buildings over 30 years old, they all have similar maintenance needs. We're all here today asking for your help with the facility challenges school districts face. Larger districts can fund deferred maintenance without voter approval through this program, while all other school districts need to get caught up on maintenance needs through voter-approved bond referendums or capital project levies or operating referendum. We have not been successful in recent years getting capital projects levies approved. We've not been successful in recent years getting bond referendums approved. This is our third facilities task force in the past several years, and the original task force identified over $100 million in needs throughout the school district. Unfortunately, the bond referendum that resulted from that work was not successful, nor was the second bond referendum last May. Now, several years later, the challenge that we face is a task force identifying needs that are almost 50% greater in dollar cost than the first time we reviewed our facilities. I feel if we had access to the alternative facilities program or access to parallel funding, such as Senate File 76, we could have mitigated many of the issues that have ballooned into this latest study. Because of this, I'm asking for your support of Senate File 76 and our bill, Senate File 126, so that my school district will have the resources on a year-to-year basis to effectively deal with deferred maintenance issues. Thank you all very much for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Martini. And Senator Saxog has a question, but I was going to ask Senator Housley if you'd just like to read. It's a fairly short letter from the students, but and you highlighted it, gets so much at the heart of, you know, the issue and the pride, the why we should have equal, you know, access opportunity for students. And when you have to sign a liability waiver to participate in activities when you have such a disparity with the neighboring districts, and I think the students really hit the nail on the head as to why we have to do something. But and because they did put together a letter, if we could read that into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. This one is from Sam Doten. Dear Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing my testimony this morning. My name is Sam Doten, and I'm a junior at McAllister College here in St. Paul. I'm also an alumni of Forest Lake Senior High School, class of 2012. I am here in support of Senate File 126 because I believe all students deserve a quality education in a school they can be proud of. It is because of the severity and pervasiveness of neglected facilities due to insufficient funding and the resulting negative impacts on the Forest Lake community that I urge you to approve this bill.
In 2012, ISD 831 put together a facilities task force to evaluate the district's building and facility needs. In its final report in 2013, the task force identified $137 million in critical deferred maintenance for the elementary and middle schools. These costs ballooned because Forest Lake lacked the money to fix problems before they spiraled out of control. Currently, Forest Lake schools' facilities are inefficient, outdated, or just plain broken. For example, outdated windows in many buildings hemorrhage heat during the winter, raising basic operating costs. Outdated building floor plans mean my elementary school, Columbus Elementary, only has a handful of secure rooms for lockdowns in the event of an unfriendly intruder. As a former member of the Forest Lake School Board, Kathy Bystrom has said, the science equipment and labs are the same equipment that she used when she attended Forest Lake in the 70s. The district pool was built to standards so obsolete that members of swim teams have to sign safety waivers to use the diving board, much less be able to host tournaments and many events, a would-be source of revenue. And the list of damaged or broken facilities goes on. Students pay over $300 a year to use the high school's parking lot, yet it is riddled with potholes and it is perpetually flooded in areas up to a foot deep. The outdoor track and, until recently, the tennis courts have damaged surfaces that do not meet competitive standards. And while Forest Lake has an amazing theater department, the Performing Arts Center's curtain and rigging system is condemned. It is non-functional and is secured by large, heavy chains to prevent it from collapsing. And these are just things seen. The other water and drainage issues, energy efficiency, and heating ventilation systems are problems that aren't noticed by students. The quality of these facilities has negative impacts on the Forest Lake community. I was an avid participant in competitive speech, debate, and student congress in high school. I had the opportunity to see dozens of other similarly sized high schools. I often felt ashamed of my own school in comparison. And while our speech and debate programs would host annual tournaments, on multiple occasions I heard students from other schools remark about the dinginess of the high school. Forest Lake does not have a positive reputation facilities-wise amongst high school students in the state. And I understand why citizens of my hometown keep rejecting levy referenda for our schools. Anti-tax attitudes are dominant, and everyone already faces taxes by the state and federal government. Consequently, they will reject the one tax they have direct control over, even if it is the one that would improve their community most. I'm still a few years from fatherhood, but honestly, I would not want to send my children to Forest Lake at this time. It is undeniably that we learn best in high-quality environments, and Forest Lake pales in comparison to other similarly sized suburban high schools. We cannot continue to coast off the investments made by generations past. Quite simply, the district needs the ability to pay for deferred maintenance to control future costs, improve the quality of education, and encourage families to move to our town. In conclusion, I urge you to support Senate File 126 so Forest Lake can thrive like its neighbors. Thank you again for hearing my testimony. Smart kid. This is Maxwell Nelson. Mr. Chair and committee members, I am Maxwell Nelson, and with me today is Samuel Doughton. We are both 2012 graduates of Forest Lake High School and of School District 831 in Forest Lake, Minnesota. We are here today to share with you how our experiences inside the facilities in this district reflect the need for these facilities to be updated and repaired. The experiences and perspectives Sam and I share with you today are not just true for the two of us, they are true for numerous other Forest Lake grads and undergrads. While I attended Forest Lake, the dinginess of our school facilities was so commonly recognized among students that it made appropriate small talk, especially as the butt of a joke. The reality of this shortcoming is troubling when put in the context of the student. The poor state of Forest Lake's facilities is very impressionable upon students because it elicits an atmosphere of mediocrity and low standards. Students have a hard time feeling prideful of Forest Lake, that it stands in comparison to other high schools academically and athletically, and that it has the resources to prepare them for the next level. The poor quality of Forest Lake School's facilities leaves an impression of inadequacy with Forest Lake students when they compare their school to other high schools and possible colleges they want to attend. Ultimately, the atmosphere of mediocrity relays a message to many students in Forest Lake that their education is not at the highest standard, and such, Forest Lake cannot breed excellence, so don't push yourself to try to get into tougher colleges. Students in Forest Lake know two things: that their school facilities are in disrepair and that the proposed levies do something about it are continually voted down by their community. This leaves students with the very strong impression that the people in their community, their neighbor, parents, and family friends do not value education, and so they think, why should we? The facilities in Forest Lake School District are in great need of repair and updating and have been for some time. Ultimately, whether or not Forest Lake receives this repair and updating, it is the students who will be affected the most. Thank you. Another smart kid.
Yes, and we appreciate those students for taking time on that. Senator Sexhawk.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And Forest Lake, I've got another example here of how you can be a poster child for us and virtually no rationale, as you're talking about. I support Senate File 75 and 76, too. But I just wanted to briefly, in relation to ship to your situation, want to talk about transportation funding discrepancies that many of us see. There's a Senate file coming forward, and as well as a House file. What we're talking about here, of course, is that some school districts have huge deficits, some huge surpluses when we're talking about transportation funding. I don't want to get into the – other than the fact to say that – so Minneapolis has a surplus of $3 million and Mankato has a surplus of $1 million. And Mr. Martini, what's your surplus or deficit on transportation funding?
Mr. Martini?
Chair Wigger and Senator – Forest Lake, the deficit for that is approximately $1 million. And I think this is very relevant to the facilities that we're talking about because for the first 6 years of my career, we had capital funding that was separate from the general fund. We had transportation funding that was separate from the general fund. And in 1995, both of those separate funds were moved into the general fund. And I do believe now it's quite difficult as those dollars compete. Although there's some reserve funding relative to capital, those dollars are competing directly for other aspects of our program. And so I think it is very important that we talk about these in this context. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments from members? Senator Housley and testifiers, thank you very much. Very persuasive. And we'll be taking it up more formally in the near future.
Thank you very much.
Great. And Senator Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to take this opportunity to say that, you know, there's a lot of people that have had their fingerprints on the legislation that we were hearing this today. And I mean just the ones that testified, but many, many people across the state, all the school districts. But I'd like to kind of make a special thank you to Mr. Melcher, Dr. Melcher from the department. He provided us, as we were meeting, he provided us with options. He provided us with accurate information. He provided us with runs. And we had the confidence in that to work off of to work up the recommendations, and it doesn't happen very often that one person practically can bring that kind of consensus together. And so I think I certainly want to thank him, and I think on behalf of the Senate we owe him a great debt of gratitude for all the work that he's done in those areas. So thank you, Dr. Melcher. I don't know if he's left or
back. No, stated very eloquently. Let's show appreciation. Clearly an MVP in the department, and we appreciate all that you do on behalf of the students of our state. Well, members, that concludes today's business. We're going to follow up. There will be meetings, obviously, with the tax committee. As Dr. Melcher referenced, there will need to be a marriage of sort between concepts here and the, you know, for the tax concepts and you know, how we get this equalized. But that is going to happen, and we'll encourage that dialogue as we meet with our local school boards and others. Continue that. You can see the impact, but most importantly, be aware of the need. It is not equal. It is not adequate. It is not sustainable for the funding of our facilities, and it's contrary to the words of our Constitution, as we were told in testimony. So that'll be a challenge as we put together our bill, and I know we'll work on that over the next several weeks. We will meet on Wednesday, the 28th, in room 112. We're going to hear the Department of Education with the governor's budget. And look forward to that. We'll have the budget books and go through what their proposals are. We aren't scheduled to meet at this point on Tuesday. Tentatively, we will on Thursday. I'm getting some bill requests in for hearings, and you know what our committee deadlines, those have been posted. We have time, but it will start to heat up, as you know. Obviously, we're waiting for some major reports on testing, on the Q count, the teacher performance. And I think we just got an email on some of the reports that are coming in. We'll be scheduling these and other reports that are coming before us once they become available, and we have various testifiers set to go. If anyone has a particular bill or item that you'd like to discuss with me, please let me know, and I'll share myself with you as well as anyone listening. It's 651-770-0283. There being no further business, the division meeting is adjourned.
Chuck, I'll get together with you sometime.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Can I take these, Chuck?
Yes.
You probably have
Access
for the
I have to write.